Hey, this is Stephen A. Smith from No Mercy. Festivals, football, flannels. Some say fall is their favorite time of year. And this fall, there are now updated COVID-19 booster shots designed to help protect against COVID-19 variants. If you've had your primary series, schedule an updated COVID-19 booster shot appointment as soon as you're eligible. And don't forget to enjoy the foliage, sponsored by Pfizer and BioNTech.
This is your operating system talking, not your computers or your phones, but your internal human operating system. I'm feeling a little overloaded. Here's how you can ease my stress. Close your eyes or softly gaze at something in front of you. Now inhale for 4 counts, exhale for 6. Keep repeating. Much better. Longer term, there's BetterHelp Online Therapy. They'll match us with a licensed therapist we can connect with via video, phone, or chat. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive and save 10% on our first month.
Bear down, baby.
Yes, sir.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
It's real simple. You know, if you take a person's legs away, they can't run.
With your hosts, David Hahn.
I want to remind people, there is no award for coming to the conclusion fastest on a quarterback in your football city. Nobody remembers, and frankly, nobody cares.
And Dan Weider.
Particularly in this town, we start to get the extremes trying to outshout each other, right? Those who think that he's a bust are trying to outshout those who think that he's going to be an absolute 7-time All-Pro.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Good evening and welcome to the Take the North podcast. I am David Haw from 670 The Score, the Mully and Haw Show. Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune is at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta following the Bears' 27-24 loss. Thank you for tuning in to the Take the North podcast. Download, subscribe, and of course, listen and give us some feedback. We appreciate your feedback. Dan, this loss to the Falcons was another winnable game, another one-possession game, and this time you can insult the Bears, but the added injury is a little bit harder to take and maybe anticipate. Let's start with the big news. Obviously, the loss hurts, but it might hurt more if this was damaging to Justin Fields. His left shoulder received, he got x-rays post-game. They were very vague about the explanation. You were there. What did you see and what can you tell us?
Yeah, so the injury that you are speaking of occurred on the first play of the Bears' final drive. Justin Fields on a design run, running outside to his left, got hit by D. Alford and just landed a little bit funny on his left shoulder, right? And so he was able to play two more plays, but was an obvious discomfort. And the Bears ultimately lose the game because of that. But the big news, as you mentioned, is the health of Justin Fields. I think there is some concern here and still digging around trying to get some information on the injury that there might be a bit of a separation in Justin's left shoulder. I think if you understand what a 3-8 football team looks like and what the future of this team looks like, the idea of him missing some time here is very real, right? As the Bears head to New York next week to play the Jets, it may be with Trevor Siemian taking over in the driver's seat of this offense. And I don't think that's what anybody wanted after what we've seen over the past month with where this offense and this quarterback were going. And so it's something we're going to have to keep tabs on. There's going to be multiple discussions this week, David, on Justin Fields' health, on Justin Fields' play, and what the Bears can do to make sure that these types of things don't become interruptions throughout the duration of his career.
Here we are with the reaction podcast, certainly hours after the game ends. So there are more questions than answers. And I think what we don't know outweighs what we do. But from your observations, and I guess just in talking to people in the locker room post game, would you say that obviously, yeah, on that first down, it looked like he aggravated it. It looked like he injured it again. But he went into that series previously having been spotted grimacing in pain. He was massaging his hamstrings. He was maybe adjusting his shoulder. He was getting worked on the sidelines. What was his physical health going into that final series as far as you know it, Dan?
Well, look, he told us after the game that all that stretching and the leg work he was doing was due to cramping, that he was cramping throughout today's game, and that was the most significant issue he was dealing with. For whatever reason, being inside and not having the fresh air of the Chicago chill that he's had the last couple of weeks of fall, he was cramping up throughout the game. And so he had to get that work done. Look, we said going into this game that we had to keep an eye on those tired legs that he talked about coming out of the Lions game, right? And make sure that the Bears had a pulse on that. You can speak to this as well as I can. I think that this loss is going to trigger a level of agitation and ire amongst the fan base that it's going to be hard to get our arms around this week because there's going to be a lot of finger pointing being done, right? And it's just going to make the discussion that we've been having really for the last month plus as we've monitored all this a little bit more complicated because I think people's raw nerves are exposed with the way that this game ended, with the injury that Justin suffered, with the way the play calling was on the last series, with the Bears' inability once again to not take advantage of a drive that put them in position to either tie or win the game in the fourth quarter. And now all of a sudden we've got a shouting match on our hands.
Yeah, let's keep our eye on the ball here, though. This is what I'm going to try to do is that look at just exactly what happened and evaluate it based on what we're used to evaluating. And
no
that
doubt.
Is play calling and judgment. And this is a reaction and we don't know a lot of things, but I think both things can be true, Dan. I think Luke Getsy really did not show a lot of smarts or wisdom on the final drive. I would have liked to seen them come out committed to moving the ball via the air, especially when you have a quarterback whose physical health was clearly already compromised, and it appeared that he was making decisions not to run, whereas in the past, had he been 100%, he would have taken off and tucked and ran. So I think that, yes, I would have been more aggressive on the final drive. I would have thrown the ball on first down. I would have thrown the ball on second down, and I probably would have thrown the ball on third down. The interception is what it is. But Dan, I think that just wrapping up here, I think that that can be true. And I'm not going to blame Luke Getsy for exposing his quarterback to injury because he got hurt on the first designed run in a series that was ill-fated because of that call. I think that when you have a quarterback like Justin Fields, he had 14 carries in the first half. This is a guy who runs the ball to the point where he has become a star in the making, and he is as big of a celebrity and as big as a guy as we've seen grow into because of his ability to run the ball. So I get that. I'm not going to place blame there. And I can also say that, boy, that was maybe Luke Getsy's worst play calling series of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that after the first down play, I said, what was that? What were they doing there? You're running basically a quarterback outside, and I'd like to know whether there was a read there pre-snap that says, okay, this could be a pass play if we get the look we want. If not, go here. Don't know that at this point. The second run is a quarterback draw after that, and you're like, oh boy, okay. So they're in a lane here that I'm not sure they want to be in on a game deciding drive. I do want to push back on you, or at least get more of your thoughts on when you say the interception is what it is, because that's this is quarterback in the NFL, and I'm not going to drop this point that a quarterback needs to be able to no matter what supporting cast he has around him, needs to be able to go and make game-winning plays and game-winning moments. And this is three straight weeks they haven't. And this one's an interception on, I think it's third and four, right? Okay. Third and four, third and five.
You're right. Let me explain that. I don't mean it the way that it sounded. That's why it's good to talk through this. I'm not giving him a pass on the interception. When I said it is what it is, it was kind of in the context of looking at the final drive the way it was called. You're in third and whatever, five. You've got to throw there. You've got to call a pass there. So your first two plays are, runs, or they were passes that were turned into runs. Whatever the case, it wasn't good execution or imagination. On third down, I think you do have a pass play. I don't like the design of it if David Montgomery was your intended target. I think you've got to move the pocket. You've got to go to Mooney. You've got to go to Cole Kmet. You've got to use your weapons. And I don't think check down to a running back in that case is. And your point is well taken. For the second week in a row, the Bears had an opportunity to make plays in the passing game in the final drive, and they were unable to do so. A lot of factors may have contributed to that, but yes, that should be the reasonable expectation of an NFL quarterback in that situation. I don't argue with that at all.
No, and I just hope that, as we go forward, that we understand that that is a box that needs to be checked eventually for this quarterback and this passing offense. If you want to argue that it will be checked eventually, okay, that's an assertion, but it's still something that needs to be shown, and there needs to be evidence of it. Look, I don't think the Bears played well really across the board today. I spent some time in the Falcons locker room after the game, in part because Cordarrelle Patterson set a new NFL record with his ninth career kickoff return touchdown after the Bears talked all week about how much of an alien and a freak he was back there and how they didn't want to give him opportunities to beat them. And then they gave him they kicked to him after with a 17-7 lead and all the momentum in the world in the first half. Right. And then you hung up a ball. Cairo Santos said he was trying to get, you know, some good hang time on it and get the coverage down there. But it's only three deep. And David, what was cool was Cordero Patterson, you know, obviously he was the victim of the fumble a couple moments earlier that set the Bears up for that short field touchdown drive. And he was asked, you know, how deep would that kick have been needed to be for you to not bring it out? And he said 12 yards. He said if it was 12 yards, they may have blown the whistle, but I was still coming out with it. So you knew where his headspace was. And he came out and really, you know, you look back at it, I'll be interested to look at it in more detail, but I don't think the coverage was terrible on it. This is just a legendary kickoff returner hitting the gas where he needed to hit the gas, and the Bears not having any contain there to slow him down enough to tackle him.
I think Hicks made a bad read on that. Elijah Hicks might have made a bad read, but you're right. This was a case, the way I looked at it and looked at the replay and watched it again during the commercial, he just committed himself to going up the middle, and he beat two defenders to a gap, and they couldn't close the angle just because he has that that natural burst, and he gets to a gear other guys can't reach, and then he was able to outrun everybody. And Brisker, I don't think, took the greatest angle. I don't like starters on special teams for that reason. I think that he looked at that, not to blame him. It wasn't all him. It wasn't maybe even, you know, 25% him. But when you have a starter on your kickoff coverage team, I think they view it as a breather, as a break. And when you're playing against Cordero Patterson, a guy who now has returned three kickoffs against the Bears with three different teams and set an NFL record, you can't take that play off.
If you're feeling down and having trouble getting up in the morning, here's a tip. Brush your teeth. That's it. Often when we wake up, our brains go into planning mode, which leads to overthinking and stress before our head even leaves the pillow. Something simple like brushing your teeth can break that cycle and jumpstart your day. This tip was brought to you by BetterHelp Online Therapy, which connects you with a licensed therapist via video, phone, or online chat. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive and save 10% on your first month.
Make this holiday season with the family an interactive one at the Tech Interactive in the heart of downtown San Jose, next to Christmas in the Park. Spend hours exploring fun exhibits together. Build and program your own robot. Design and ride a roller coaster. Engineer and test your own launching device and more. Immerse yourself in exciting new worlds in the largest IMAX dome screen in the West. Get tickets now at thetech.org. That's thetech.org. The Tech Interactive, where science meets fun for everyone.
No, no question about it. I joked with Patterson after the game. I said, look, like five of your nine career kickoff return touchdowns have come in Bears games, three against the Bears and two while with the Bears, right? So the majority of his damage comes with us watching, right, very closely. And look, he was very, very, you know, excited about the milestone that he reached. And but the Bears, you know, they've got to be better on special teams. They got to be better on defense. You can't allow the opposing team to go down the field on the first drive of the game and score a touchdown without having to convert a third down. The only third down that the Falcons converted, it was because Justin Jones had a neutral zone infraction and they didn't even need to run a play, right? And so just errors across the board. And we know that this is what this team is. We know they're 3-8. We know they're a last place squad. We know they're kind of climbing up those draft boards. But all that is to me is a revelation of how far they have to go, right? And I just, like, it's hard to wrap your brain around the idea that it's no big deal. You know, it's no big deal to be one of the three or four worst teams in the league because we'll just get it turned around in one offseason. It's, to me, it's an illumination of just how long it's going to take to get yourself to be ready. I mean, this is the Lions and the Falcons the last 2 weeks, David. I mean, this isn't the top of the NFL. They're going to see the Eagles in a couple weeks. They're going to see the Bills in December, right? Like, they're going to get a look at what top tier football looks like. They're looking at middle to bottom tier football and they can't win.
Well, it's also just a testament. You have a season in which you have parity is there if you want to embrace it. And you have teams that are doing that. The Lions, you have teams like they saw today, the Falcons. You have teams that can rise up on the rare occasion and play like the Bears played against the Patriots. But that was four long weeks ago, and it's going to be more than a month between victories. And while a lot of people want to justify the draft position improvement and a lot of things saying that doesn't matter, try telling that to Matt Eberflus. Try telling that to a guy who was at the podium today and now is after his fourth straight loss, and he talks about the character of the team. It's going to be tested, and I will be curious, but you got six games left to go, and you have a Bears team that – has answered maybe one question this year, and that's about the quarterback, and now he's compromised. So I don't know where this goes from here, but it's a very difficult six games ahead.
Well, try telling that to Ryan Poles. As you know here, sometimes we're in the press box and the front office sits directly above us. When Justin Fields threw that interception to end the Bears' last possession, Ryan Poles slammed the table behind us in the press box and was visibly angry that that was the way that game was going to end, and him and his staff marched off to the locker room. And so it tells you that they're not just in mail-in mode, right? They're not just in this, these results don't matter to us mode, right? And that's on the inside for a guy that's going to be the architect of trying to put this thing back together in the offseason. The immediate task is putting Fields back together, right? And now you've got a guy who obviously his physical toughness is undeniable. And Justin came and met with the media after the game and said, look, like it was the last drive of the game. I wasn't going to pull myself out at that point. And so you give him so much credit for the ability to gut through things and make a decision like that. But ultimately, you now have to worry, right? Like, how do we manage this over the last 6+ weeks of the season to make sure that we don't see something more severe, right? Or something that nags, or you get this shoulder injured again. And so now they've got a bunch of decisions to make, and they're not easy decisions, and they're not going to help the competitiveness of this team if we're going to see Trevor Siemian for 2 or 3 weeks. Who knows? Who knows what direction this goes?
The x-rays and the medical information will probably make their minds up for them. If it becomes a judgment call, then it becomes very interesting because you start to weigh the things that we've been talking about all season long, the health and preservation and development of a quarterback, and what can he do in the final six games to prove what he hasn't proven yet. And as you say, the boxes that he's checked almost all the boxes this year.
Yeah.
The ones that he hasn't keep coming up. They were unchecked last week against the Lions, and they're unchecked today against the Falcons, and people can push back at that. But
they're big boxes, David. They're big boxes.
And if you're evaluating quarterbacks, you can't really, you know, you don't get my stamp of approval. Boom. You don't get that, not just me, but any evaluators of approval until you check those boxes.
I think he was at 153 passing yards again today, so that's still a total below 200. I think the Bears only had 99 total yards in the second half, which was a regression from what we'd seen over the past month. Of course, you're allowed to have a slow half after you've been on the tear that they've been on. No one's going to hold them to that standard every single quarter of every single week. But it also seemed like the Falcons found some answers, right, to keep them contained and to keep them playing on their terms. And that was one advantage of going into the Falcons' locker room. Dee Alford, who was the cornerback who actually knocked Justin out of bounds on that hit that hurt his shoulder, said, look, like, we knew that this was the league's number one rushing team, but we also knew that we could keep them one dimensional. And so, you know, some of the game plan was to do things that kept Justin in the pocket. Now, to Justin's credit, there are times where they have him surrounded and they've kept him in the pocket, and he still somehow finds a way to escape and get out. But it did seem at times that they found ways to make him stay in there. And Justin still doesn't seem comfortable pulling the trigger on reads that are on straight pocket passing, right? Like the big completion to Montgomery, which was probably one of his best plays of the day down the sideline. There was a deep shot there to Mooney that he just didn't take. And I, you know, some of those one-on-one matchups ripped the trigger. Now you're gifted enough to get out on the move and buy time and then make that play and hit a 32-yard gain that keeps a fourth quarter touchdown drive alive. And you get credit for that, but they're going to have to continue to work with him on seeing what NFL open looks like from inside the pocket and just ripping it.
That 32-yard completion of Montgomery was tremendous, a thing of beauty, because he pointed, then he threw, and it was a dart. The Cole Kmet 23-yard catch was great because one-handed, but it was, you know, more the catch than the throw, but it was a pretty completion. The 67-yard overthrow, I found it interesting that Darnell Mooney said he was tired, he didn't run the great route, he took responsibility. I don't know about that, Dan. I think that you have to put that a little bit closer. That's one of those things we talk about. Not every quarterback's going to be on all the time, but it just underscores how you'd like to be more predictable and consistent in the passing game.
No question, and that's a missed opportunity, right? You've got a 67-yard touchdown sitting there for you with the defender that fell down, and so that ball's got to be completed. You got to be able to connect on those things. Look, there's going to be pushback. We've established that there's a crowd out there that doesn't want Justin blamed for anything, but Justin's got to check some big boxes here to be, you know, if we're going to anoint him a 10-year answer in a city, right, and the savior of an organization that hasn't had a winning franchise franchise quarterback in since the Luckman days, right? Then you have to see certain things that make it look like this is going to be something that's there. I don't know. It's just this is going to be an uncomfortable 6 or 7 weeks because of where they're at now with 3-8, with the status of Fields. Now Luke Getsy is certainly going to be under fire from the fan base given the way this game went, and it's going to be an interesting Thanksgiving week up at Halas Hall as they try to right themselves, because you know as well as I do that like finding motivation, right, and finding morale. They've won one time since September ended, right? That's a long skid here. There comes a point where human nature says, you don't even need to check out all the way, but if you check out 15%, all of a sudden the product is way worse.
That's why it's, to me, you have to always at some point in time value what winning means or respect what winning means to an organization, how hard it is to win in the NFL, and why you have to take advantage when you do have winnable games and you can't blow them down the stretch like we have seen now 2 weeks in a row, unfortunately. All right, let's bring in Adam Studzinski, give away some game balls, moral victories. I don't know how to categorize them anymore. I'm running out of boxes to check. But Studs, if you had to give your game ball today, who would you give it to?
So I'm not a huge moral victories guy. Like the Miami Dolphins game was a moral victory. The last couple games have just been kind of painful to take. But I'm gonna give my game ball to Justin Fields because and you guys have talked about it. Like, you know, we can talk about the bad plays he had, and like he certainly had his bad plays, and he certainly cost them at times. At the end of the day, he had 238 yards of total offense, accounted for 2 touchdowns, and led that fourth quarter drive where he was responsible for the entire drive. I walked away from the game feeling like his coaches and a lot of the guys around him let him down in more ways than he let them down. And so I'm going to give him the game ball because it felt just gross to me walking away, having to watch him walk off the field hurt, having played as hard as he did, and not getting to win the game. It just, so I'm still obviously upset about it.
The injury is the hardest thing to see, I think, for everybody, because you don't want to play that out because there's so much we don't know.
And one thing, and I want to make sure that we do bring this up, and we don't have to discuss it a whole lot, but the thing that upset me the most on that last drive was on second down when he slides and there's a helmet-to-helmet contact and there's no flag. That was the third time that I counted in that game that there should have been a flag, that by the letter of the law that Tom Brady gets these calls all the time, that was the third time in that game that Justin Fields should have had a flag called that would have given the Bears a first down, and it wasn't called. And it's been happening for 2 years now with him. So I don't know what the guy has to do to get a call like that. And then, of course, the next play, he throws that tip pass interception. And that becomes the story that we have to talk about. But and by the way, sorry, one last thing. That ball was in David Montgomery's hands.
Oh, no.
I froze frame this thing multiple times, Dan.
You can freeze frame it. That ball is 3 feet higher than it needs to be. Yeah, it was not a good ball. That's the stuff we've got to avoid, where it's like, yes, it hit David Montgomery's hands. Justin's own admission is he sailed it. It was a poorly thrown pass, and we've got to avoid that little trap of saying, oh, my God, Justin's infallible. Blame the other guy.
No, you're right. Stuff
just had meatballs for dinner, so.
It was on him. Yeah, that was that's my meatball moment right there. You're right. The last throw was on him, but everything leading up to that just really frustrated me. It's like, oh, now of course he's going to throw the interception that ends the game after there probably should have been a first down, after his offensive coordinator put him in a terrible position 2 plays in a row, and after his team just played bad around him for 3 quarters. So Justin Fields is my game ball. I didn't mean to go on a whole tangent.
That's okay. Cool. You're going to be taking calls, right, on 670score, 670score.com beginning one time.
Not today, not tomorrow, okay. Actually, because I'm working for Chris Tannehill on the afternoon show all week. So, but the week next week after that, I will be. Gabe Ramirez will be on at 3 a.m. on the Score.
Awesome. Call in and let Gabe know what you think about what Studs just said. All right, Dan, your game ball.
I'm going with Jaquan Brisker for the fumble he forced on Cordarrelle Patterson, right? It was just a hits principle type play where Cordarrelle Patterson turns a busted run into a 17-yard gain, and he's loose and he's getting a little greedy. But as Brisker said in the locker room after the game, like, we saw on film that there's times when he gets in the open field and he's a little bit loose with that football. And so his eyes saw an opportunity to go give one of those punches, knock the ball out, and it creates a takeaway. Jalen Johnson jumps on it. The Bears turn that into a 29-yard touchdown drive with Fields scoring on the 4-yard run, and that's everything you're asking for, right? Like, you want a takeaway that turns into points, and they got it there. And Jaquan Brisker continues to show moments, right, that tell you, okay, like, we can lock this guy into the depth chart for 5, 6, 7 years here and feel pretty good that you know he's going to make more big plays than poor plays.
I like him. I like the way he played today. He hits with authority and confidence. I'll go on the offensive side because I don't think that defensively, even though they only gave up 20 points, it's still hard to find. I'm not going to go Jack Sanborn. He had 9 tackles. He had a good day. I'm not going to go, opposite to that. But Sanborn did a nice job. I'll go with David Montgomery. 67 yards rushing, 54 passing or receiving, and overall an increased load from Khalil Herbert's absence. David Montgomery, even though Stud says he should have caught the ball on that last play, I will go with, in defense of David Montgomery, saying it was a little high. Don't hold that against him. David Montgomery gets my game ball.
All right. Yeah. Look, the Bears rushed for 160 yards, and we're at a state now where we say only 160, right? Like, right. They've been so good getting up north of 200 that when it's at 160, you're like, boy, what a regression that was. That was interesting. But Treston Ebner, we talked about wanting to see him take advantage of the moment. His production there wasn't there today. And so the Bears may miss Khalil Herbert more than we thought.
All right, we'll wrap things up real quickly here with a couple of loose ends. So, Dan, tell us how the week typically will work in regard to injury and information. Also, is there anything else that came out of this game? The one thing that we can get into on our pod that will drop Tuesday morning, I want to explore this whole Tevin Jenkins, available to back up but not play mentality, because Michael Schofield struggled and deserved to be replaced and he wasn't. So I kind of want to know where that is headed and anything else you saw today that's going to linger and kind of pay attention to in the first days of this week.
Look, the Jenkins thing was one I wanted to talk about. And like you said, we can talk about it at more length when we come, because Matt Eberflus, I asked him directly after the game, you know, how is it that Tevin is healthy enough to be active, but not capable of starting, and Matt's answer was basically, that's what Tevin told us, right? And so that raises some questions as we go forward here and try to get our arms around that situation. I also think, for those who are curious to see if Chase Claypool could have a bigger impact on a game in his third game as a Bear, wasn't there today, was it? Didn't really see a lot of Chase Claypool, not a lot of big play opportunities there. And so we're still looking for, you know, that other receiver outside of Darnell Mooney that Justin Fields can rely on. The Mooney touchdown catch in the first half was a thing of beauty. Really, really nice route run. Uses the switch release there and gets the screen from EQ St. Brown and Justin puts a ball on him, and that's the type of play that you want to see on the regular. And so that was a nice moment.
And as Studs points out, besides you take Justin Fields out of the rushing equation, Bears backs had 23 carries, 75 yards. So I wonder if we're giving the offensive line more credit than maybe they have earned or deserved based on the explosiveness of a quarterback who's running all over the place and makes people miss. I don't know. Maybe it's there. Maybe this is just an overreaction to, boy, they didn't get 200 yards rushing, but there's something to keep an eye on. That offensive line composition always is. Riley Reiff, I think, saved an interception earlier in the game, so I guess he gets a little bit of that's a plus instead of a minus on that play.
Yeah, and that was a ball that hit a Falcon in the helmet. Justin, later in the game, hit Michael Schofield in the back of the head with a ball. That was like, whoa. Yeah, he beamed him in the back of the head. That wasn't the best there.
Last thing, Cairo Santos, he's hard on himself. He's asking a lot, I know. But what did you think about that missed field goal? He's had a couple bad weeks where I'm sure that they were probably long. It was a long flight home for Santos. He probably feels like he should have hit that one at the end of the first half. And it comes on the heels of last week missing an extra point. Where is his head, do you think?
Well, look, I think that would have been a career long for Santos. And so it's not necessarily like that was right in the wheelhouse of his range. And so there were some questions there, right? Like on why, I'm trying to remember the situation there with how much time was left in the half, but it was 4th and 9 there from the 38. So they go for the 56-yard field goal rather than, rather than punting, right, and setting themselves up for more success there. I think the Falcons ended up getting a field goal on top of that, right, at the back end to tie it up going into half. And so, that's some situational game management that's worth looking at, too. I'm less worried about Cairo because that's a long kick as I am about, lost in this past month is, our examination of Matt Eberflus as the head coach of this team, right, and the things that he's able to do to create success. Is, if you're just going to forgive a stretch where you lose 7 of 8 and don't take a deeper magnifying glass on is the coach doing enough to set this team up for success, then we're going to miss a pretty big boat as well. So that's something that in the weeks ahead, I think we got to make sure that we keep our focus on, even as Fields' fever takes over the conversation in so many ways.
I like that. I like that idea, and that's what we'll begin to do or continue on Tuesday when we drop our next podcast on Take the North. Dan Wiederer's column on this game can be found at ChicagoTribune.com. My column on this game can be found on 670thescore.com. Call the score, 670thescore, 312-644-6767. Gabe Ramirez will start taking your calls at 3 a.m. until 5:30 when the Mullin Haw Show takes over. So thank you for joining us after this 27-24 Bears loss to the Atlanta Falcons on the Take the North podcast. Download on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Listen and subscribe. We'll be back Tuesday morning. Thanks for listening.
Great talk. See you out there.
This is your operating system talking, not your computers or your phones, but your internal human operating system. I'm feeling a little overloaded. Here's how you can ease my stress. Close your eyes or softly gaze at something in front of you. Now inhale for 4 counts, exhale for 6. Keep repeating. Much better. Longer term, there's BetterHelp Online Therapy. They'll match us with a licensed therapist we can connect with via video, phone, or chat. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive and save 10% on our first month.